southwestern Missouri. The forecast for east central Illinois this afternoon, showers are likely. We may see some isolated thunderstorms as well. The high 60, the wind from the south at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, showers are likely. There is a chance of evening thunderstorms, then another chance of showers and thunderstorms after midnight. The low 53. The wind will be out of the southeast from 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Look for a high of 67. It will be breezy with a wind out of the south from 15 to 20 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, showers with a chance of thunderstorms. The low 52. The wind from the south at 15 to 20 miles per hour. Wednesday, partly sunny, breezy, and cooler with a chance of morning showers. We'll see a high in the low 50s with the temperature holding steady or slowly falling in the afternoon. The wind Wednesday from the west at 15 to 20 miles per hour with gusts to 30 miles per hour. And the outlook for Wednesday night through Thursday night, partly cloudy with lows in the low 30s and the high Thursday in the mid 40s. At noon central time, most locations in Illinois and Indiana were cloudy. Many reported light rain. At Rockford, it was 57 degrees. O'Hare, Bloomington, and Mattoon reported 56 degrees. 67 degrees at Carbondale. South Bend reported 56 degrees at the top of the hour. At Lafayette, 55. Indianapolis, 62. Terre Haute, 61. Willard Airport reported light rain and fog at the top of the hour. The temperature, 55. The dew point, 54. The relative humidity, 96%. And the barometric pressure, 30.20 and falling. And at 12:39, 55 degrees in Urbana. Illinois lawmakers head to Springfield tomorrow for the last week of the fall veto session. Several big items have been pushed to the back burner, Illinois Public Radio's Kristen McQuarrie reports.
This is how strapped Illinois is. Governor Pat Quinn recently said he needed to close 7 prisons and homes for the disabled because there's no money to keep them running. That means a major reshuffling of the mentally ill, some of whom were sent to institutions because they're dangerous. It means relocating adults and children who have severe physical disabilities. There are many, many examples. The state is so far behind paying its bills, it had to stop a program that buried poor people whose families couldn't afford to.
We're broke, as everyone knows.
Ty Fainer is a former Illinois Attorney General and president of the Civic Committee, which focuses on economic growth. His group has been pushing legislation that would make state workers, teachers, and others pay more toward their retirement funds. Because the state is so far behind paying its share to their retirement accounts, the bill just keeps multiplying and taking a bigger share of the state budget. State Representative Kevin McCarthy is chairman of the House Pensions Committee.
I don't think there's any member of the General Assembly who doesn't realize that this is a problem that we have to do something about.
But lawmakers seem to be gearing up for their final week of session without addressing the biggest budget pressure facing taxpayers.
This all comes from basic cowardice, and I mean that word sincerely.
Fainer says lawmakers are too worried about getting reelected. Groups that oppose the pension bill are powerful. Unionized teachers and state workers are hounding lawmakers with phone calls and email. And union leaders are determined to run candidates against incumbents who support the idea of making their members pay more. The unions say the financial mess is the state's fault, not theirs.
My name is Dan Dunlap. I'm from AFSCME Local 1133.
Dunlap represents workers at Dwight Correctional Center, a state prison. He wore a jacket with his union logo during a protest at the state capitol last month. He took aim at Governor Quinn.
The money was there when the agreements were put in place. I think that he needs to find the money that they have squandered.
Even legislators will admit they used the pension system as a credit card. When there wasn't enough money for schools or health care for the poor, they made a smaller payment into the retirement accounts of workers, thinking eventually they would catch up. But it didn't stop there. They also made pension benefits better over the years. They made retirement ages younger. They made retirement income go up each year, higher than the cost of living. And they added more workers. Basically, they created a system that can't sustain itself. House Republican leader Tom Cross is sponsoring a bill to overhaul the pension system, and he's ready for a vote on it this week.
I mean, you can sit here and point fingers, but I think this is the issue of the day. And if we don't get a handle on pensions, it will consume us like we've never seen before.
Lawmakers meet for 3 days this week. So far, it looks like they'll be asked to vote on a tax cut package for businesses and maybe a casino bill. But the state's biggest money crisis, pensions, just might get kicked to next year.
That was Kristen McQuarrie reporting. The next time you talk to a police officer, you might find yourself staring into a lens. More and more officers are wearing small cameras on their uniforms. The idea is to capture a video from the officer's point of view for use as evidence against suspects, as well as to help monitor officers' behavior toward the public. The concept is catching on. NPR's Martin Casti reports the technology is raising a number of questions and concerns about access and privacy.
Hispanic male got a black shirt, blue jeans, standing in the front yard. He's got two machetes in his hands.
You've seen police videos, but maybe not quite from this angle. In this footage, recorded in Texas, you see the suspect from the point of view of the officer holding the gun.
Put it down. I do not want to shoot you, man. Put it down.
No one got shot in that scene, just tasered. This recording is on the website of VView, one of a handful of companies now making wearable cameras for cops. VView's $900 device looks like a clip-on pager. Officer Ben Sias tested it for the Bainbridge Island Police Department in Washington State.
It's mounted either in the car or I can wear it on my uniform. And normally when I would go on a traffic stop or make a contact, I would flip it on. And the only thing that really was different as far as doing business would be that I'd tell the person that we were being recorded.
Most of the time, Saya says, people don't even seem to register the presence of the camera. They have other things on their minds. Saya sees the cameras as a kind of insurance.
In this job, we're frequently accused of things that we haven't done or things are kind of embellished. Sometimes people's perception or what they report may not be what happened, and the cameras show pretty unbiased opinion of what actually did happen.
That's the hope, anyway. On the other side of Puget Sound, the Seattle Police Department is looking for ways to handle the fallout from other people's videos. For instance, this one last year showing a Seattle cop punching a teenage girl.
Are you serious?
Seattle City Council member Bruce Harrell says images like this have undermined community confidence in Seattle police.
What we have now are videos after the fact, you know, the second punch kind of situation.
So Harrell is pushing for Seattle police to wear cameras too. He wants a more complete view of some of these controversial encounters between police and the public, and he's also hoping to get a calming effect from the camera's very presence.
People behave differently when they are on camera. I'm behaving differently because you have a microphone in front of my face. That's what human beings do, both the public and the officers. So these cameras, I believe, can restore trust.
Harrell's enthusiasm is not shared by Sergeant Rich O'Neill, president of the Seattle Police Officers Guild. He doesn't like the fact that many of the departments that have adopted the wearable cameras have given their officers little discretion. They're required to record every contact with the public, and they can't stop recording until it's over, even if a citizen asks them to. Sergeant O'Neill says people should think hard about what it'll mean to have police officers show up at the front door with a camera rolling.
Now I'm bringing the camera into your home, and maybe I'm there for something as small as a noise complaint. Maybe I'm at your home for something much more serious. Maybe it's a terribly traumatic event, domestic violence victim, a child abuse victim, and I'm going to be walking in that home videotaping.
Of course, in public, there's no escaping cameras anymore. This is YouTube video of the mayhem that broke out recently between Occupy protesters and police in Oakland, California. Some of it was posted with running commentary.
But if you doubt that the police were deliberately aiming at the protesters, watch this policeman.
It can get pretty forensic.
Watch that again.
What these YouTube sleuths may not realize is the fact that Oakland police are equipped with wearable cameras, so they may very well have a recording of their perspective on that very same scene. If they do, you won't be seeing it on TV anytime soon. Oakland doesn't release police footage that's part of an active investigation. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, says Rocky Lucia.
Facts don't come out on a 30-second YouTube video.
Lucia is the lawyer for the Police Officers Association in Oakland. Departments generally negotiate with their police unions before they adopt the cameras, and the unions push for rules that limit access. For instance, police don't want supervisors trolling through the videos looking for infractions. At the same time, officers also want access to their own tapes. In Oakland, Lucia has made sure that cops get to see their own recordings before writing reports or making official statements.
There's going to be inconsistencies. It's our job as the union or the association representing the police officers to make sure that the officer isn't held accountable for inconsistencies that could lead one to believe that the officer is not being truthful.
But some people worry about the opposite problem, that the only ones with easy access to the videos will be the authorities.
My name is Eric Rackner, and we're standing at the corner where 3 years ago last week the Seattle police arrested me illegally.
The reason for Rackner's arrest doesn't really matter here. Suffice it to say that it had something to do with a sidewalk game of something called Nerf golf. What's significant here is that Rackner believed he'd be exonerated by police videos, footage from dashboard cameras in this case. But when he tried to get the videos, the city dragged its feet for months. He says for a while, the city wouldn't even acknowledge that some of the videos existed.
They really just don't want to give it out unless it is just a clear-cut example of something that supports what the officer said or tends to show that the arrestee is guilty.
Rackner eventually received a $60,000 public disclosure judgment. He also demanded and got a log of all Seattle police videos shot in the last 3 years, and he's now posted that on a searchable website to make it easier for people to find out if police have recordings of them. He plans to keep updating the site, and if Seattle cops start wearing cameras, those videos should be searchable too.
Events that occur in public and are recorded, especially in the course of a public officer doing his public duty, that's fair game.
Police videos are generally considered public records, but in practice, departments are giving new reasons not to release them. For instance, Oakland is now withholding some footage on privacy grounds. Still, public interest in those recordings is likely to intensify